It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We've got a great panel for you. Brianna Wu, she's running for Congress and, of course, is a game developer. Aaron Griffith from Fortune.com and Larry Magid from CBS Radio. We're going to talk about the latest tech news. New emojis are here. The Samsung Galaxy S8 is here. And yes, Congress decided you don't need privacy on the internet. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 608, recorded Sunday, April 2nd, 2017. Super Canoe. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by WordPress. More websites run on WordPress than on any other platform. Create your website today and get 15% off at WordPress.com/TWIT. That's WordPress.com/TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone and enter TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we get together with some of the best tech journalists in the biz and talk about technology. Larry Magid is actually in the studio with me from CBS Radio. Good to see you, Larry.
Good to see you, Leo.
SaferKids.org.
SafeKids.com and Connect Safely. You got close.
How many years have I said that wrong years? Now?
Actually, just go to ConnectSafely.org.
ConnectSafely.org.
That's the nonprofit.
It's even on the screen if I would just look.
I'll look at your screen.
Nice to have you. It's nice to have you in studio. Usually you're on Skype.
It's great to come to Petaluma. It's unfortunate that there's huge traffic even a Sunday to get here.
Especially on a Sunday, because people come up here for vacation.
Especially when you're going by the Golden Gate Bridge or Golden Gate Park. But it's lovely. Nice to see you. Lovely new studio.
Thank you for coming up. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Also back from Fortune.com, where she's a senior writer, it's Aaron Griffith. Great to see you and your bike.
Hello.
Back from Thailand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she says she's still a little zen.
Yes. I'm actually going out to San Francisco next week to meet with a ton of venture capitalists and tech startups. So I'm sure after that will be enough to wipe away any leftover vacation zen.
You get all the stress that they're under. You'll get all that stuff.
Oh, yes. It's palpable.
Aaron has, besides reporting a senior writer at Fortune, where she's been for several years, she also now does the term sheet.
Oh, yes.
Daily newsletter for people who are investors.
Yeah, that web view is clearly has a bug in it.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. More.
Yeah, generally people don't read it online, so that's kind of a thing that we don't advertise to.
We don't pay any attention to that.
Yeah. Haven't been a lot of resources dedicated to it. Actually, it used to look a lot worse. It had no line breaks in it. But anyways, read it in your inbox.
Yeah, that's supposed to be a comment. I don't know why we're seeing that. Brianna Wu would pick that right up. She's, of course, a developer, and I'm really thrilled to say this. I don't know if it's the first time ever. Candidate for Congress. Yeah. In the Massachusetts, is it 8th?
It's the 8th district here in Massachusetts. So it's scary, but you know, our tech policy here in the States is so bad that I think we need developers and engineers like making our policy. So I threw my hat into the ring. Oh, I'm very excited about it.
I love that idea. I hope more people do it. You're running, this is for 2018?
It is for 2018. Okay. And yeah, I got to tell you, Leo, I'm so excited. In a few weeks, we're going to be starting an initiative where I'm going to try to recruit other Silicon Valley engineers to run alongside me, especially Republicans. We need the Silicon Six to basically go take over the tech subcommittee in Congress
and
write some just sane policy, because it's terrible right now.
Especially after last week with the privacy policy.
Well,
it was so disastrous.
Let's talk about that. But also, didn't Donald Trump just say that they have not fully staffed the Office of Technology in the White House? I think
that's exactly what I heard.
They're getting no information.
So who took over Megan Smith's job? Do we have a CTO?
A CTO? I don't think we're missing half of the cabinet positions are unfilled. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it's pretty clear when you hear members of Congress talk about technology. Some know, some understand. I think Ron Wyden understands. Yes. There are some members of Congress who are pretty savvy. And then, you know, for better or for worse, Daryl Issa, who is fairly tech savvy, even though some of his policies I wouldn't agree with. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of them just really, it's like they never even used a computer.
Yeah. I always thought there were two political parties when it comes to tech, the clued-in and the clueless.
Yeah.
And they have R's and D's next to their names.
So. Yeah.
Well, I really agree with that. I think the axis isn't right versus left. I think it's informed versus uninformed.
Exactly.
As we've started looking into this policy, you know, cybersecurity is a national security issue. It has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats. And we are massively vulnerable just because the people making these policies don't understand it. So I think it's very patriotic for people that really have a passion for making better policy to step up and to, you know, do public service.
Great. Well, good for you.
That CTO position is, a Senate-confirmed official position. I don't know if there's been anybody nominated to fill it. That's a very good question.
So I'll register in your district and vote for you. And, of course, I'll still vote in California.
Yeah.
Because we all know that that's
rampant. It's okay
rampant
to do that now. That's the new thing.
Okay, it's rampant.
All right. Brianna's also a developer and a gamer. And GiantSpaceCat.com is her company. A Boston independent game studio.
That's what we do.
So I guess we might as well start with the political apologies to those who say, I just want to hear about the new Samsung Galaxy S8. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important. I'm hearing a lot of talk from normal people about this as well. Congress, and that is the House and now the Senate, mostly along party lines, approved a new bill that, among other effects, it has actually a number of effects, but among other effects, overturns a privacy regulation, the FCC implemented October of last year, mm-hmm. that prevented ISPs from selling your information to marketers. Should point out that, you know, this is a very new rule, so it's not like we're making a big step backwards. This is like how it was last year, let's say.
Right.
ISPs also include telecommunications companies like Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, and AT&T. They're your ISP on your phone. And so there's some concern that ISPs... But this bill also does more. Brianna, you probably should. We'll let you explain. This bill prevents, as I understand, the FCC from making any regulations of this kind in future.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, it's a really disturbing bill. I think one of the strongest arguments for it is that, you know, Facebook and Google kind of have a duopoly on using your information to kind of market products to mm-hmm. you. And, you know, their argument was they wanted, you know, Verizon and other internet service providers in the mix being able to get this information. But the thing is, if I, you know, choose not to use Facebook, I can opt out of that. I can't opt out of, you know, using an internet service provider. So it's a really big violation for privacy. And, you know, I can't be the only engineer that started looking at VPNs this week. And it's very disturbing to find out if I use a VPN, I'm not protected.
Not fully protected.
A lot of people, I think there's a little, some people are overly concerned. And this is maybe fostered a little bit by the tech community. The guy who created Cards Against Humanity said, oh, fine, then I'm buying Congress's search history and I'm going to publish it. This was never on the table that you could go to an ISP and say, I want Larry Magid's search history.
Right.
They're not selling individual information.
Yes and no. So, I mean, part of what they want to be able to do and what Facebook and Google already do is to target ads. So, for example, if I get an ad that's aimed at people in Palo Alto who are interested in technology, it's not necessarily that they sold that information, but that they've aimed that ad to me. Somebody basically bought my demographic. But again, to repeat what you just said, is that not only are Facebook and Google voluntary, you don't have to use either of those products. You can use DuckDuckGo as your search engine if you want. But it's almost like the difference between a store having a camera in the store versus the city having a drone following you everywhere you go.
Your ISP sees everywhere you go.
They see what time, in my case, they see what time I go to bed because I use my IoT system to turn the lights off at night. They're going to soon be able to see what's going on. Literally, this is scary. I'm about to put in something under my bed, which will measure my wife's and my sleeping patterns. You can't get much more intimate than
that. Yeah, but
that.
Who wants that?
Nobody
wants that.
But the point is that nobody should have that information.
Well, I guess.
You know, they can start marketing sleeping medication to me or who knows.
But that's not on the table. That is not the kind of information ISPs plan to sell. Verizon
Hopefully
said that
not,
anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that if they were to do that, then I think we would see some action. What is mostly, and by the way, they also can't see, they can see when you're going to Google and Facebook, but they can't see what you do with Google and Facebook because in both cases, they're using SSL or TLS to encrypt it.
Right.
And now I kind of understand Google has been pushing for HTTPS everywhere, as has the EFF. Mm-hmm. For some years, Google even says, we'll rank you higher in search results if you are a secure site.
Right.
Now maybe it makes a little bit more sense. We did that with twit.tv, but it's not like I was worried that somebody was going to, you don't even have a login. What are they going to steal? But now I understand that prevents the internet service provider from seeing what you're doing on that site.
Right.
They can see that you've gone to Google or Facebook or Twit, but they can't see what you do on that site.
If you go to larrysworld.com, the second article, you'll see, among other things, an interview with Mignon Clyburn of the FCC, with a Democrat. But also,
is she still a commissioner?
She's still a commissioner, okay. Yeah. I also have a sidebar on there, which is how to protect yourself. And, of course, using encrypted sites is one, Tor browser is another. VPNs.
I'm not sure I'd want to use a VPN all the time.
It's an option. I mean, I don't use a VPN.
Doesn't it slow you down, Brianna?
Yeah.
It slows you down a lot, I think.
It does. And Ars Technica had an amazing piece this week looking at that to protect yourself. Tor, we all love Tor, but you know, you're locked into a very specific version of Firefox. It has, you know, vulnerabilities. So there is a way to look at it where that could make you even more unsafe in some ways. So, you know, Leo, I do have to agree with you. I think some of the rhetoric around this has been a little overheated. But I think what really frustrates me is the pattern, because you know, now they're going to be collecting this information. In some ways, I'm less concerned about Verizon having this information to market to me. I'm more concerned about them not, you know, storing it properly, right, not using proper InfoSec encryption, and then people for nefarious purposes obtaining that. That's what I'm worried about, because that really could be tremendous damaging to just ordinary Americans. And it's just another thing that we're losing for our privacy.
I also think that even though this doesn't change the rules that much, I mean, given that that's how it was in September 2016, mm-hmm, it's just the same as that. But it is more than that, a signal to these ISPs that Congress and the government doesn't care what they
do. There's no cop.
And so in a way, it's permission. Verizon got in trouble for the super cookie that they were putting on everybody's browser. If you were a Verizon customer, Verizon was identifying you uniquely to every site you visited, and the site could then go to Verizon and say, well who is that?
Mm-hmm.
Verizon got in trouble. They got the FCC went after them. They got a judgment against them, a slap on the wrist, $1.7 million fine, and they were prevented from doing that. That ended the super cookie, but that's not going to ever happen again. And I think Verizon's going to say, it's open season now on our customers. The other thing that bothers me, maybe Aaron, you want to comment on this, is it feels like our Congress has got – the telecommunications industry is the number one donor to Congress by far. Spent a lot of money. But by an individual congressperson – They sold pretty cheap. I mean, a few $1,000 contribution, and you got that vote. They don't care about consumers.
I mean, what I think is kind of noteworthy about this entire thing is that I agree with Brianna that some of the rhetoric has been a little bit overblown. It seems like some of the headlines I've been reading, it's like people are melting down, like they sold you out.
Yeah.
But I think it's important that people are finally getting freaked out about their data, because there's been so many, every time there's a new retailer that gets hacked or Yahoo gets hacked, people maybe change their passwords, but they don't really change their behaviors or think that much about their own personal privacy. And they don't really push companies to be more secure. It's kind of one of those people shrug and say, well, yeah, I guess we're all kind of vulnerable and we can't protect ourselves. So that's how it goes. And I think the fact that people are starting to pay closer attention to this and realize that they need to take action is good.
Mm-hmm.
So the freaking out is maybe needed.
And I also think that Brianna's point about if data retention, I mean, if this is a valuable resource to the ISPs and they start warehousing this data, that makes it all the more vulnerable to hackers and also governments. And I use governments with an S in the end, plural, getting access to this data of ours. So I think it's more than just commercial privacy. It's safety, security, and protection against government intrusion that concerns me about this. And also, why, you know, it's sort of like the network neutrality debate. I mean, it's true that this law didn't change anything on day one. But what's the point of going in there and killing this particular FCC regulation? Who benefits besides AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and the other large
ISPs?
Well,
let me make the argument that the congressmen and women who voted against it or voted for it argue. Brianna, you mentioned one argument, and an argument Verizon's brought up, which it levels the playing field. Google and Facebook have this data.
Which aren't regulated by the FCC.
Why shouldn't your ISP? But I think we've shot that one down.
Right.
The other argument, which is a larger argument, and is a philosophical argument, is that the government shouldn't be regulating the internet at all. That the free market should control this. And it's true, if you had a choice of an ISP who promised not to do this, most people would choose that. Our ISP here doesn't. It's SonicNet. But my ISP at home is Comcast. Right. I can't get SonicNet at home. And most people in this country don't have that kind of choice. But from a purely philosophical point of view, I'm not sure I disagree that government regulation of the internet is fraught with peril.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could get a free market and real competition going, that would be preferable.
It's very difficult to do because of the last mile problem. You know, I do believe the government has a role to play in facilitating this. I think one of the reasons, you know, we're hesitant to do this is because Congress is so inept at forming a policy.
They don't understand the internet. They shouldn't be regulating the internet.
But they're not regulating the internet. They're regulating the virtual monopoly duopoly that is running wires to your house. I mean, Comcast and AT&T.
They created that duopoly, by the way.
Yeah, they're the only two providers that I can get where I live is Comcast and AT&T. So it's not like I get to go through the yellow pages and pick, I'm going to get this ISP because they've got great privacy.
If
I could, that'd be fine. Yeah. No problem. And that's the problem.
I think I would add this. I think particularly with InfoSec, this is not the kind of problem that the marketplace can solve because neither the seller nor the buyer is interested in spending the money. You know, consumers, we can, as technology people, we can believe that there's going to be a magical future where, you know, ordinary people care about VPNs and stuff. It's not pragmatic. And then, you know, for a company like Verizon, it is to their economic benefit to collect as much data as possible. So the only safeguard this pragmatic I can see on privacy is government regulation. And it's exactly like you said, Leo, these Congress people, their votes are being bought for a pittance. And, you know, if I'm elected, I'm not going to take money from these people. I couldn't do it ethically. And I think they shouldn't take money either if they're regulating it.
Of course, that was the very brief candidacy of what's his name? Larry, the guy who created the Creative Commons.
Oh, Larry Lessig.
His very brief candidacy, unfortunately, he kind of got out of the race too early. What his whole plan was, which is crazy. Larry is a constitutional lawyer. He created the Creative Commons. He's a brilliant thinker. For a long time, he was fighting against DRM, but then he realized none of this is going to ever work until we get money out of Congress. And his whole plan was to run for president, get elected, choose a really good vice president, run for president, get elected, completely reform campaign finance so that there's no private money at all in campaigns, and then resign and let the other guy run the country. I wish Larry had won, but Larry didn't stand a chance. Here's a full-page ad from thefightforthefuture.org, which is one of many. This was a group that started with the SOPA debates a couple of years ago.
Right.
KeepOurNetFree.org and Save Broadband Privacy. Dear Mr. President, you just got spied on. Big league. You know what it's like. You really do. Don't subject us all to the same bull hockey. This is your chance to prove if you're with the money or with the people. Aaron, is that really the choice that Congress made, with the money or with the people?
Sorry, I'm really stuck on the big league.
It's actually big league, isn't it?
Big league.
No, he's always been saying big league, but he says big league. And it sounds like big league. Yeah.
That settles
the
debate.
Yep.
I mean, I think part of this is that this requires Congress standing up to these companies and saying, no, you're a utility. I'm sorry, but that's what you are. That's what you have to be treated by as investors. And that's the obligation that you have to your customers. They do not want to be utilities because that is not a great business. It's a very low margin, boring, low growth business to be in. And until that happens, they're going to be pushing more and more into the data and content business.
Well, we're going to have that in the next couple of weeks on Twit. Title II will absolutely be one of the top stories because the new chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, has already said that this Title II was the way the FCC did regulate net neutrality. The president has also already said he's not in favor of net neutrality. This rule will be thrown out, and it'll be thrown out soon. I don't know if Ajit Pai could do it with a stroke of a pen, if the president has to do it, if Congress has to do it. But there's absolute consensus that this regulating ISPs as utilities is not going to work, which means that was the only mechanism that the FCC had to regulate net neutrality. Net neutrality is out the window. I think it's safe to say over the next few months, all regulations protecting consumers on the internet are gone.
It appears that way.
But is it a hair on fire moment? I mean, I hear a lot of people saying, I'm going to use a VPN. I'm not going to use a VPN.
I don't think the VPN is the solution. I mean, I think if it's an option that people can have. I use it when I'm overseas for two reasons.
Well, I use it when I'm on an open access point.
I use it when I'm in Russia. I use it when I'm in China. Yeah. And I hope I don't have to add America.
But Netflix won't let you watch Netflix on a VPN. Your bank probably won't let you log in on a VPN.
Right, but when you're in Turkey and you want to use YouTube and Erdogan just banned YouTube, which is what happened to me, I needed an ISP. When I'm in Russia and I know for a fact that they spy on foreign visitors, I use a VPN. But the point is that we shouldn't have to do that. I mean, that's, I think, the point that Brianna made, and I agree, we shouldn't have to resort to extraordinary means to protect our privacy.
Should we write our members of Congress, Brianna? Is that effective? Should we?
You should. I hope people will run for office alongside me. But, I think net neutrality, without net neutrality, we really don't live in a free society. And I'm not somebody that wants to say this is a hair on fire moment, but, we've seen the way this administration talks about, internet issues, and they clearly do not even understand the basics. So, I think it's a very, very serious situation. And, that's a lot of why I'm running for office. Again, it's not right versus left. It's informed versus uninformed. And I think you'd be very hard pressed to find a journalist that doesn't strongly believe in net neutrality or an engineer.
And Brianna, I also don't think it's regulation versus non-regulation. I mean, certain things you don't want Congress to regulate, like content, right?
Yep.
We don't want Congress regulating speech. But there's a difference between enforcing privacy regulations, which the Federal Trade Commission supposedly does anyway, and other kinds of things like net neutrality. It's not the same thing as controlling the internet, not controlling what you and I can say over the internet. So I think we just have to be smart about how we regulate and not have this attitude, regulation good, regulation bad. It's just more nuanced than that.
You know, there's a Twitch broadcaster in Germany that Germany has required him to sign up for a broadcast TV license because he's a broadcaster. And that's the kind of regulation that would scare the hell out of me. I don't want the FCC to start regulating podcasting. So I think that you can overreach as well. So I remember we talked to John Perry Barlow when the EFF was debating, how it wanted to protect net neutrality. The EFF board agreed net neutrality needed to be protected, but a good number of the board members didn't think that government interference was the right way to do this. I don't know what the right way is to do this. We fetishize free markets in this country as a religion. And I don't think that's necessarily bad, but there are some things free markets don't do well.
Right.
And that's why we have antitrust rules, anti-monopoly rules, because free markets tend to often run into monopolies. And as soon as something's a monopoly, there is no free market.
Why we have
choice.
A healthcare policy, because free markets have not done a particularly good job in keeping healthcare.
So I think it's legitimate to say there is a role. I don't want to use the word government. There's a role for us as a society to limit what these businesses can do. But I think there's also room for debate about how far we want to go in that. And there are certainly risks involved in government regulation of the internet.
If I could say one last thing on this, I completely agree with you, but I think it's really important to look at policy we're currently getting. Do you guys remember the Mirai botnet last year, which took down a huge amount of the internet on this coast?
Yes.
What's really shocking to me is one of the Republicans on the technology subcommittee in Congress that I may be working with, Marsha Raeburn, she came out and blamed the Mirai botnet on SOPA. She blamed it on piracy. Gizmodo had the headline, "This is the kind of idiot that's in charge of, you know, regulating the internet." It was beyond fair. So I agree with you, Leah. We can have a reasonable conversation about that. But the more my campaign gets down and really studies the sausage being made by the technology subcommittee, it's just stunning to me. And this is, it's not the conversation that they're having. It's just a free-for-all giveaway with the people that donate to their campaigns. And it's just tremendously disturbing. It has huge cybersecurity consequences for this country.
Yeah. I also don't want, I mean, I think that there's a good chance that the technocrats in Silicon Valley are going to look at Trump's election and say, oh, I guess I could run. I mean, we think Mark Zuckerberg may run, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I want Mark Zuckerberg.
He's the worst choice out of any tech, out of any prominent tech person. Like, I think Trump, if he's taught us anything, is that people want authenticity and people who are themselves. And Mark Zuckerberg's supposed campaign is him going around and very stiffly shaking hands with people, like almost like cosplaying like a politician. And
honest, I'm a human. I'm a human. I really am. I'm not a robot.
Yeah. People would relate to that or even find that inspiring or, yeah. I mean, you know, so if that's what he's going
watch.
For.
I mean, watch. Like, I'm sure Jeff Bezos is considering it. Mark Zuckerberg is considering it.
Bezos would be a little bit more compelling.
I don't think Silicon Valley is – I agree with you, Brianna. We want people to understand technology. But I don't think technologists necessarily are the right people to run the government either. You know, I think there's a technocratic point of view that, well, we know how things run. And we're going to fix this all, and I'm not sure that's right either. Politics is a lot of art, yeah. And a lot of compromise, and a lot of negotiation, and technologists are not noticed. Notable,
but I do think it would be good to have a few more tech savvy people in Congress. I'm not sure I necessarily we need to have a technocrat as president, but for Congress to understand the more nuanced and subtle issues of what's going on in the technology world would be helpful.
Yeah.
We you know, we talk a lot about diversity, and I don't think we talk enough about diversity of background. You know, right now, over 40% of Congress is comprised of lawyers. I worked with plenty of lawyers in my career, but there's you know, just having Congress so hyper-sampled from that group, I think it leads to a suboptimal outcome. So it's not just that I want more, you know, technologists running for Congress. Yeah. I want more, you know, Georgia Dow. She'd be a great congresswoman if she weren't Canadian. She comes from a therapy background. Yeah. I want more academics. I just want more people with different perspectives coming and representing themselves in government. Because I think, you know, clearly the system we have right now is not working.
I really like that, Brianna. That is a great goal. Let's just make it more diverse. More voices is always going to be better. More voices heard from. I completely agree with you on that. Let's take a break. We've got a great panel. Brianna Wu is here, Space Cat Gal on Twitter. And don't forget our website. BriannaWu2018.com. If you're in the Massachusetts 8th, Brianna Wu's the gal for you. How about that? Wow. Can you use that?
You can do that. We're thinking of
Wooey going to call
like as our like campaign slogan. I like it. You going to call.
Erin Griffin is also here. She's at Griffith, I'm sorry, at Fortune.com. Sorry, Erin. You're not related to Andy Griffin. That's somebody else. No, Andy Griffith.
Yeah.
Griffith.
He's also a Griffith.
Are you married? Are you married? I think I almost asked, are you married to Andy Griffith? I do not mean to ask that. Are you related to Andy Griffith?
I don't think so. Although growing up, my dad had a lot of paraphernalia from that show.
He liked it.
Around, but Mayberry. I don't think there's any relation.
I bet it wasn't even his real name. He always played the country guy, you know, the hick.
Yeah, Mayberry.
But he was from Brooklyn. He was from New York. So
good actor.
I mean, he was an actor. That's called being a good actor.
Right.
No, he actually was born in Mount Airy, North Carolina, and he is Andy Samuel Griffith. So I take it all back. I apologize. But he's not Aaron's husband. Also, Aaron's husband, by the way, I hope you don't mind, but he's in the background right now trying to figure out how to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Matt, have you solved the Rubik's Cube? He said not yet.
Poor guy. He has to sit quietly.
Oh, no. I froze.
He can't. And Erin is frozen. Erin is frozen. She's frozen, ladies and gentlemen. Also with us in studio, and it's nice for a change to have you in studio, the great Larry Magid of CBS Radio and connectsafely.org.
Hey, you got it right.
I got it right this time.
Thanks.
Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Ransomware, what was the number I heard? Ransomware in 2016 was a $1 billion business.
Yeah, it's huge.
And the costs in terms of data down and time lost, tens of billions of dollars last year.
You want your data stored off somewhere else.
I was talking to somebody, I won't name names, who's on the board with somebody who's with a federal bank, and he's told me that the federal bank was saving bitcoins because, and apparently a lot of private businesses are doing this now because they're worried about getting bit by ransomware, and they want to have bitcoins ready to buy the unlock key.
Yeah.
This is the worst strategy I've ever heard.
Yeah.
For crying out loud. Don't stock up on Bitcoin. Get Carbonite. get a good backup. Backing up isn't hard. It's easy. Here's what you want. I credit Peter Krogh, my friend, the photographer, with the 3-2-1 backup. You want three copies of everything. And by the way, if you delete your original, that's one copy. So three copies of everything. Two different media so that you're not tied to DVDs or USB. But one site, one should be off-site. Right. One needs to be away. Because what if, you have fire insurance if your business burnt down. If your backups are sitting next to the computer or, in a closet somewhere and it burns down too, you could rebuild, but can you rebuild your data? Can you rebuild your customer list and your supplier list and your accounts receivable? Can you pay your taxes? You can't do any of that because it's all on the computers. Back it up with Carbonite. They've got great plans for small and medium businesses, for homes as well. And if you want to read more about using Carbonite for ransomware mitigation, go to the Carbonite for Office site. Take a look at resources. They've got a bunch of white papers about ransomware, how to mitigate it, how to prevent it in the first place. And it's not just an ad for Carbonite. It's a really useful, some very useful white papers. It's all free to you at Carbonite.com. So is a free trial. No credit card required. If you do the free trial, though, please use the offer code TWIT. That way they'll know you heard about it here, and you'll get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Protect the business data right now at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 2 months. Free.
Yeah, I love them. What I really appreciate about Carbonite is, like a lot of technical people, my spouse is less technical than I am. And I love it because I just set it up on his computer and it's no problems. Because, for me, I can, use Super Duper and make a mirror copy of my hard drive bit for bit. Frank's just not about that. And I just think it's an amazing product for people that don't want to mess with it.
They're in your neighborhood, too. They're in Boston. That's exactly right. I know our audience often, they say, I've got Jungle Disk set up with S3 buckets and I'm going to have, they're geeks. So, of course. But I guarantee you, in your family, there's somebody who doesn't know what backup is, who is stocking up on bitcoins. Do them a favor and tell them about Carbonite. What was a government institution that was doing this.
Where do they keep their bitcoins?
Oh, in their wallet. In their Bitcoin wallet.
Their Bitcoin wallet. I worry about that.
Crazy. Crazy. Aaron is unfrozen.
Yes.
Yes. Now she's silent. Silent as the day is long.
You can't hear me?
Now I hear you,
There we go.
Okay.
Everybody's back. Hello, everybody. Let's talk about shiny objects, because I know that's why you turn in this show. You don't want to hear about politics. You don't want to be here about bad. Let's talk about the Galaxy S8, the new exploding phone from Samsung. No.
It's a hot phone.
No, it's not going to explode. Samsung had an event on Wednesday in New York City. I don't know if anybody went. Showing off the new S8. You didn't go, Aaron?
No, I shouldn't be saying this in the context of this podcast, but I don't really cover gadgets. So,
no, I resisted covering gadgets for years. I wanted to talk about computing and technology. Mm-hmm. And anytime I went anywhere, people say, "Yeah, but what about the new phone?"
Right.
Because all people care about is shiny gadgets.
Right.
Those stories get a lot more traffic than my very, very thoughtful analyses of the latest M&A transaction.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy.
Right.
So I ordered the S8 Plus because that's my job. And actually, you know what happened is I kind of in the process fell in love with gadgets too. And now I always have a new phone every 5 minutes. This is going to be the precursor of what we're going to see a lot in the next coming years, which are essentially phones with minimal bezels, minimal frames, Even Apple supposedly with its next generation iPhone will get rid of the physical home button. Mm-hmm. And spread that screen almost all the way to the edge, top, bottom, and left and right. The Galaxies, for some times now, since the S6 Edge, have gone all the way around left to right.
Right. Yeah. Well, optionally, the high-end models go all the way around.
And I actually like, they call it, now they're calling it the Infinity Display, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I actually like it. I don't like the curvature. I don't see, there's nothing to, you know, that edge is wasted. It's not like you can, they put stuff on there, but I don't, I never use it.
I never use that.
And you're
not sold on the utility of it.
Yeah.
You know, I buy pretty much, I have to with my job, you know, running a game studio.
Do you do mobile games?
We do. We've looked really hard at doing Android games. I was really sad when they announced this phone because I was going to buy it. And I'm like, I'm running for Congress. I don't have to buy this phone this year. I'm very sad about
that. You do as the president does and use an S3.
Well, no, I think we'll go with the more secure phone. I think it's a gorgeous phone. I'm a little worried about the lower battery size in it. Like they did go very conservative with battery tech this time, understandably.
I wonder why.
Yeah, but I have to say the curved display, the Samsung Galaxy Edge is a more beautiful phone, but I think people don't understand that when you're actually using it, it picks up glare and it's just very awkward. Plus, like,
it looks pretty, but it's not practical.
And if you have a case on your phone, it kind of destroys it anyway. I mean, the case, you know, the Edge covers it.
So what I was excited because they're making two models. The S8 is 5.8 inches screen size. And the S8 Plus is 6.2 inches. But I was excited because they've gotten rid of the bezel. I checked the measurements. The S8 Plus, the bigger 6.2-inch screen, is the same physical size of the phone as an iPhone 7 Plus, which is a 5.5-inch screen, because you don't have all this wasted space. It is weirdly tall. So LG did this with their new G6, too. They're doing these tall phones so that you can use one hand.
Right.
If it's too wide, and I actually couldn't do the Apple 7 Plus with one hand, but these are narrower, taller phones. So I don't know. And they're getting rid of the fingerprint reader on the front. They're going to put that on the back right next to the camera,
which I
so
like.
You can smudge the camera.
The Pixel has it on the back.
Yeah, the Pixel has it in the right spot.
I like it, so I can just
go
like
Samsung's this. Going to put it up by the camera.
Oh, yeah, that's not so good.
Yeah.
And then they'll have a capacitive button, although there's an option, apparently something physical under the screen, so you can press the screen really hard and there'll be a home button there. That's dopey. I'll turn that off right away. Apparently you can. And then one more thing that is a little controversial, they've added the iris scanning, which is very secure. That was in the Note 7. Mm-hmm. I had that for about a week before I had to turn. Liked it. It was a little slow. You had to position it just right, but it's as accurate as a fingerprint reader because your iris are as unique as your fingerprint, maybe even more so. They're going to have the fingerprint. And then they're also going to have face recognition. And all the videos we've seen, it's like this. It's instant. Boom. Unfortunately, somebody at the show on Wednesday brought a picture of themselves, or actually took a picture of themselves with their phone. This is intrepid journalism. And then was able to unlock the S8 with a picture of themselves on a phone. And even Samsung says it's not the most secure. It's not secure at all.
I thought they were supposed to look for some movement, like look for your eyelashes.
So there's some apps that do this. On my banking app, USAA uses face recognition, but they say in the process, blink now. Now blink.
They got to see the movement. Yep.
This is a Windows machine. This uses Windows Hello. And Windows, if it's a Windows Hello face recognition capable machine, they don't just have a regular camera. They have a depth sensing camera like on the Kinect. And that can tell if you're, you know, if you're a human, if you're in three dimensions. And they can also, the way these face recognitions work, they measure like distance, interpupillary distance and length of the nose. But they can also measure the depth of the eyes. You know, how big your mouth is, if your ears are in the back of your head or in the front. And so that's more accurate and probably less easily spoofed, I would assume.
But you still have to have a password as a backup.
You should.
Yeah, well, you have to. Yeah.
And Samsung says if you're going to use Samsung Pay, you should use fingerprint or iris to be extra sure.
So my big question with it is TouchWiz. You know, this is kind of infamously the issue with Samsung phones. Yeah. And what I found really frustrating is, you know, like Apple has stolen so many designs from, you know, Samsung. I want to see them do reachability where you double tap and it moves down the screen you know, one of the bigger ones. Oh, I use it all the time. Yeah,
I absolutely turn that off because it confuses
really? Me. Really? Oh, my goodness.
In fact, I've even had people call me and say, I don't know what happened. My screen slid down. How do I fix that?
I use it all the time on my Android.
Apple does that all the time. They add features like that that people forget about or never use.
Yeah.
You use that, huh?
I use this, yeah.
Yeah. How about 3D
Touch?
Mostly
to get to settings.
That confuses normal people.
Yeah. It drives me crazy because, you know, I want to, on my iPhone, I want to press and hold the icon to erase it to get it to go jiggle, jiggle, jiggle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it never jiggle, jiggle, jiggles. It always does 3D Touch and pops. And it's like, you have to do it just right to get the jiggle, jiggle, jiggle. I hate that.
Yep. I like the.
I'm starting to sound like Regis Philbin. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. I do like the 3D Touch where you can use as the cursor because I send like my iPhone 6 Plus or 7 Plus is like the that's what I do all my email on, yeah, right? Yeah. So I think that's
wow,
faster.
Really?
Like,
you don't use a computer for email?
I, you know, when you're running for office, you spend so much time out there going to churches and just different events. Like, it's really hard. Like, I have you know, the standard MacBook, you know, like the 12-inch one they made. I bring it with me, but I do most of my work on my iPhone these days. So it's just reality of it.
So you have to start your campaign years early.
I do. I have a lot of work to do. And, you know, even Barack Obama did not win his first time out of the gate.
Right.
So I'm, you know, if I lose in 2018, I'm going to be knocking on my opponent's door again in 2020.
Oh, really? So, you promise that? You're going to, you're not just, that's great. Wow. Yep. I'm so impressed, Brianna.
It's fun. People don't know this. Running for office is so much fun. You get to talk to people all day long. You hear their stories. You learn about what their hopes and their dreams are. You learn about their families. It's fun, and no one talks about
this.
See,
that's the difference of you and me. You actually like people.
You seem very friendly on this show.
Seem is the word. I don't really like people. I could never. I served briefly. The city of Petaluma had a technology committee, which it was political. Mm-hmm. And I served briefly on that, like a month or two, before I went absolutely bonkers with the pace of government, which is snail-like. Yeah. And that's, by the way, I understood that that's a good thing. You do not want an efficient, fast government, because then you have no time to stop them.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was frustrating for me. And I think, you know, if these Silicon Valley people end up running for office, I think, frankly, President Trump is starting to get a little, like, this is not what I thought it was. Right?
Oh, that happened on like day two.
Yeah. I think you get in there and somebody like Barack Obama was really well suited to it. He grew up in that environment. He liked that. You know, you could see the presidents who kind of like process and they don't mind sitting there for hours and talking. And then somebody like Trump, who's been running a family business and his word is law, gets in there. It's got to be frustrating where you can't just say, no, pass that bill.
I think at least working for a public, I mean, Tillerson at least worked for a public corporation, so we understand.
Rex Tillerson is struggling with
his role. Right, I understand that. But the idea of being a CEO of a private family company does not prepare you to run a government, you know, agency where you have constituents that actually have something to be said.
Every president I know.
Yeah, I would even say specifically in the real estate industry, which does deals in a very different way than almost any other industry.
Right.
And treats its customers in a different way than many other industries is also very specific.
Yeah. If you're in real estate and you say that's a 700 story building, when it's really a 52-story building, that's okay. It's acceptable. That's that's just called salesmanship, right? And he's clearly a great salman. But it's a little different when you're president of the United States and you say, there were 80 million people in my inauguration. You can't – you can't say that. You have to start kind of hewing the line a little bit closer to fact.
I think that we're starting to learn where the breakdowns are happening because he's getting away with it.
Yeah, I mean, look, that is part of the job, too, is salesmanship. Let's not forget. I mean, you're essentially selling an agenda to the American
Reagan
people.
And Obama and Clinton were all great.
You got a lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, but look at how he sold it. Anyways.
Okay.
Go ahead, Brianna.
I think local politics is just a little bit different because I think, you know, the presidency, that's the entire nation. What I'm finding is local politics is a lot more, you know, talking to people that need very specific things allocated in the budget for their businesses to survive. I'll give you an example. There's a company out in District 8 that's looking at vehicle-to-vehicle communications, right? Like obviating crashes by letting vehicles like talk to each other so they don't, you're getting information. That involves regulatory apparatus, like making it free for them to do that. So I think I do agree as an engineer. I think it's going to be frustrating in some ways. But I also think like I think that this last election has really made a lot of people realize, like people had never thought they could run before, that maybe it's time to get involved there. And, you know, I think every day about how I can't let this change me, and I can't let this change who I am and what I stand for. The biggest, you know, tragedy wouldn't be losing a race. It would be letting this process change me.
Yeah, losing yourself. So if I go
there, right. So if I go there for 2 years and I just can't do it and walk away with a clean conscience, I won't run again.
You know, if Donald Trump is inspiring people like you and people all over the country to get involved in politics, and maybe he really is making America great.
That's
the great part of America.
I'm a hippie.
Yeah.
And I remember Nixon. I remember the 60s.
Yeah, me too.
And you do too, I think.
I told you I'm on Nixon and Trump's enemies list, both.
He literally is. Yeah, so. But that's another story. I'm on Tim Cook's enemies list.
So. Well, that's another story.
It's always the case that, there's pendulum swings.
Yeah.
And when it swings one way, it activates the people on the other side to get participate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if we see more participation and more diversity, as you say, Brianna, and I'm sure you told Frank, kick my ass if I change into somebody else.
I absolutely have. No joking at all. That's something that a lot talks about.
Yeah. Yeah. You want people around you who are going to hold you to a standard.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I've always said that behind every member of Congress is a good man.
And hopefully you actually know how to use Twitter effectively.
Huh?
Hopefully Brianna knows how to use Twitter responsibly.
Yeah. I do. Yeah. I do.
She's very good at it.
I think it's a little hard because I'm a kind of fiery feminist. And
you got in a little bit of trouble, we all know.
Yep. Yes. Yes, I did. I did. I was saying something this weekend about asking people not to make fun of Christians. And I got in a lot of hot water from that, from the progressives. So it's very difficult walk that balance. Yeah.
I really like that. Do you find after Gamergate that you are more careful about what you say in public and especially on Twitter?
No. Well, I try to be very genuine. You know, I think it's really hard for anyone to just be their honest self with the public. So I was very careful to not let Gamergate change me. It certainly matured me quite a bit. But I still say what I think and what I feel. And I think that's just very important.
I think it's very brave of you because I think a lot of people who had been, hit with that horrible vituperation and attacks that you got – would choose to hide, would choose not to be in the public eye, would say, that's it. In fact, I've been tempted to get out of the public eye. And you are going in exact opposite direction because of your convictions. I think that's awesome. Bravo.
Leah, I could turn the camera to the 90 degrees right now. You could see a smashed window in my house where somebody drove through it and threw a rock through my front window.
Still.
Because I can't hide my address. And and it's a kind of thing where some people shut down. For me, it just made me completely fearless. You know, there's very little that scares me after Gamergate.
I am so impressed. Wow.
Wow.
Bravo.
Agreed.
All right, moving on. Actually, let's take a little break because there's more to talk about in every area of technology. I'm just going to – I'll let you guys have the rundown. If there's something you feel like we should talk about, I'm going to let you you pick. Twitter's retiring the egg. Wow. Big story. Breaking news. Yeah. We're not going to solve the harassment issues, the abuse problems, but you'll be glad to know that the new anonymous icon on Twitter is no longer an egg. It's a egg-shaped human.
They put out a blog talking about their inclusive design decisions behind that, which I thought was
No! What?
They really did. So look, go back to the page there. Look at the figure. They deliberately designed it so it doesn't look like a man or a woman. And they put a lot of thought into that. So I appreciate iconography, and I appreciate anyone that puts a lot of thought into that iconography. But it's hard to not feel like Twitter is attacking the wrong problem.
the problem is so complicated for them to solve. And I'm not saying that they have done a great job at even attempting it, because they've clearly been so much slower than all of their competitors. But I feel like until they have satisfied everyone, which may be never, any change that they make, any product update they make, is going to get that exact same reaction, like laughter, anger, making fun of them. And also, why haven't you fixed the bullying problem? I don't know if they can win. They have such core users that expect the product to stay the same and be working exactly the same way, that I feel like it's going to be hard for them to expand the product and change in any way to appeal to a wider audience, which is what they're trying to do, while also appeasing their core audience that doesn't want them to change anything.
I've kind of come around a little bit on Twitter. They seem to, and Brianna, you'd be more of an expert on this than me, but they seem to have done a better job of suspending accounts.
Yep.
It used to take me sometimes a long time to get an account suspended. They respond a lot faster than they used to.
They do. Twitter does not get the credit they deserve here. I've talked to them so often in back channel over the past few years. You have teams of people that are there working their butts off to solve this problem. And it's like you guys said, it doesn't matter what they do, they get critiqued on it. The iconographer, the graphic design person that designed that egg had nothing to do with Twitter's harassment department.
Right.
And their work is going to get blasted. So yeah. Twitter is moving faster. They're making good decisions there. It's getting better. And I do think they're held to a double standard versus somewhere like Reddit, where if you're getting doxxed on Reddit, there's practically no oversight with that. So I wish people would give them credit for the work that they're doing, because they're really making strides.
It's part of my work
and
with
in
Connect
fact,
Safely.
Actually, unrelated to the what they're doing with harassment, part of Twitter's problem for the longest time has been that they were too beholden to their core users and too scared to make any changes or to improve the product to make it more accessible to outsiders, because people would freak out. And so they would say, okay, no, let's keep the product exactly as it is. Whereas if you look at other social networks like Facebook that are constantly rolling things out and just basically ignoring when users push back and complain, and that is how they've been able to attract a bigger audience along the way. I would actually argue that Reddit is in the same boat there with Twitter, where they're afraid to change anything because their core users will really become angry. And that's why the product is kind of confusing and looks a little bit dated compared to, some of their contemporaries.
So as part of my work with ConnectSafely.org, I'm on their Trust and Safety Council, and Anita Sarkazian is on a number of the people who've actually been victimized by some of this harassment. And they take it very seriously. I mean, they have a staff of people who actually work really hard to try to up the game when it comes to bullying and harassment. There's pushback, no question about it. There's pushback from the engineers and others and the marketing people in the company. But it's a real struggle. And what people don't realize is when companies are dealing with these issues, is there's sometimes subtlety. Sometimes what appears to be a good move from the standpoint of protection brings up issues when it comes to free speech. And there's a lot of tension back and forth, irrespective of their economic issues.
It's pretty clear if people were forced to use their real identities, it wouldn't fix this entirely, but it would certainly mitigate a lot of the problems. I mean, Facebook doesn't have nearly the problems. Even Google Plus, which used a real name policy for a long time and no longer uses it, still remains a little bit better. You disagree?
I don't actually think that the real names makes that much of a difference. If you look at Facebook Live videos, we do a lot of them at Fortune, and the kinds of comments that people are willing to make with their real names and photos attached can be just as horrific and harassing as what you can find on Twitter. The problem is just that you can't make, if Facebook decides to delete your account or sort of take action against you, you can't really easily make a new profile like you can on Twitter.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Aaron. And the academic research absolutely backs that up. We all think anonymity is a really big predictor of this. Science shows that it's not. So, I also think we tend to talk about it from a very American-centric viewpoint. If you're locking in people's identities, think about, you know, situations like in Egypt, where Twitter played a really big part in the, you know, the uprising against the government. You know, there's a downside, like engineering is all about trade-offs. And every time we talk about one of these policies, there's a trade-off about it. So, you know, we got to think about it.
That, but so, okay, so, so I've always been coming from, and I guess I'm wrong, from the point of view that, you know, there is the free speech argument and the free speech wing of the free speech party, which Twitter's always claimed to be. Mm-hmm. And it always struck me that 4chan, Reddit, and Twitter really became cesspools because of the anonymity there and their very kind of dogmatic support for free speech. But mm-hmm. but that's not reflected in the numbers.
The science shows it's not. I honestly, I think more than that, the really big problem nowadays is bots. Twitter is overrun with bots, frequently from Russia. Mm-hmm. We're seeing very deliberate social manipulation with this. There are a lot of really great articles out there about how they do this on Reddit as well. But there's, you know, nowadays you can write bots with these talking points, which are kind of simplistic, and you can just have them going and flood people's conversations and really make it seem like there's public pressure for something when there's not.
So you think bots are a bigger problem than trolls?
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. And that's coming out now as part of this whole Russia investigation. I mean,
1,000, they said, the intelligence committee said 1,000 Russian bots making fake news during the campaign.
Right. So it's definitely, you know, it's having a huge impact on the politics of this country right now.
Yep. Well, this takes us actually to something we were talking about before the show. Dana Boyd's very interesting piece in Back Channel on Medium about fake news. And I think we could talk about this when we come back. How about that? That's my vote. We've got other stories we can do, too. Our show today brought to you by one of my favorite companies of all time, WordPress. Did you know that WordPress runs 27% of all the websites in the world are running on WordPress? For years, that was my blogging platform. In fact, I've been setting up my blog once again on WordPress and having a great time doing it. I'm doing something differently. I always had a self-hosted WordPress, and I thought I'd try WordPress.com, which is their hosted version of WordPress. And there's some real advantages to that. For one thing, WordPress.com keeps your site up to date. It does all the updates. It does all the security patches, so you're always secure. They offer a huge selection of plugins and themes, all the tools you need, and it's a community at WordPress.com. So you're joining a global community, which drives traffic to your site just because you're a part of it. And if you're a complete novice, if you don't have any experience in building a website, WordPress can guide you through the process. It is easy as pie. They have hundreds of customizable themes. You can make it your own. They have built-in search engine optimization, social sharing. If you want to support the AMP platform so your pages load super fast on mobile, it's just a checkbox. HTTPS, secure HTTP, it's built in. Let's encrypt, it's built in. They do everything, which I really like. They have a publicize feature that automatically shares posts to social media networks. You can share previously published posts as well, so you get lots of nice social sharing features. Of course, your visitors have share buttons as well. And it's got great support 24/7. You're in great company. Answers to your questions to get you back to getting your site up and running so fast. I just love WordPress. I feel like I'm coming home when I come to WordPress.com. And no longer do I have to worry about keeping my plugins up to date. It's all done for me. It is so much fun. I'll be rolling out my new WordPress site very soon. I'll let you know all about it when I do. You can get started today. And believe me, I took advantage of this with 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to WordPress.com/twit. Create your website, find the membership plan that's right for you, and save 15% right off the top at WordPress.com/twit. I've been with these guys forever. I know Matt Mullenweg well. I know the team well. It's just a great company. It makes me so happy to welcome them back to the Twit Podcast Network. WordPress.com. 27% of the internet.
Yep. Wow. All of my sites are in WordPress.
Isn't that amazing?
That includes Fortune.com.
Okay. Even big publications. Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know Fortune was running on that. Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah. Recode runs on it. A lot of them.
Recode does too? Yeah. Well, there you go. I like doing ads for companies people like. You know? Yeah. When I do that Truss ad next, though, you don't have to. No, I'm just kidding. Wait, one more thing about Twitter, then we'll get to Dana Boyd's article. They did now say that the at reply is not going to be counted
right
in the 140 characters. Why are you laughing? That's
people freaked out on this the same way they do with every Twitter product update.
No, you can't make any changes, Twitter. You can't. But yeah. This was Although a big deal, especially when you had one of those. Remember the Twitter canoe?
Mm-hmm.
Where you
well,
have
did you see this? Did you see the super canoes that people were creating, no. adding yeah. like hundreds Scary. Of at replies, and then just saying hi?
No, is Twitter going to do anything about that, or is that going to be?
I would hope that seems like a bug. I don't know what can they say. You can only add 7 people. I don't know.
That's hysterical. A super canoe.
Ugh.
I found it confusing because you couldn't really tell on mobile updates if it's a direct message or if someone's responding to you publicly. You really have to be looking closely. And I have open DMs. I get a lot of spam sent there, and I couldn't tell if someone's trying to give me a news tip or if it's just some random teenager trying to mess with me.
Well, that's brave. Open DMs, but I guess you have to because that's how you get tips, right?
Yeah, I'm very disorganized with my contacts, so that's the easiest way for me to get in touch with people I'm trying to report on.
So a canoe was when you'd have at reply. You know, you have a lot of names, but now that they don't count against the 140 characters, there's no limit to how many names. So a super canoe could have hundreds of at. Oh, wow.
They have to cut it off at a certain point, but I saw some floating through my feed that were gigantic.
I was happy to see them do it.
It's a new way to spam.
Yeah.
It is, but they also had the mute conversation feature, which they finally added that. So, you know, I was added to the super canoes. It's just click a button and it's gone. I'm happy to see them addressing the core usability issue with Twitter because it's impenetrable for normal people. And I just think this is another thing that, you know, it puts the replies to any tweet right underneath it. And I think it's a big step up.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons that it was impenetrable is because with only 140 characters, you really had to make it super succinct. I've been on Twitter since 2006, and I still felt like sometimes I was having a stroke when I was reading Twitter. It's word salad. I don't understand what I'm reading.
And I've gotten in trouble trying to take something complicated and say it in 140 characters wind up embarrassing myself.
Well, you know, your first mistake is trying to say something complicated.
Yeah.
I find it a great discipline, though. And it is to take something long. I write it long.
Right.
And then I play with it. And I think there is a certain skill to making a coherent. Oh, yeah. And I always attempt to be coherent, like give context. I mean, I try to make my responses like you could read them and understand them, not like you were having a stroke. And what is this word salad?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it works really well for Donald Trump because I think he thinks in those very short, bombastic ways. But some of us are a little more complicated than
Bigly.
The way we think.
Yeah. Bigly.
Bigly, yeah.
Yeah.
Bigly.
He has a natural talent for it, that is for sure.
If there was ever a person made for Twitter, it's the president. That's for sure.
But actually, that's why Twitter is wise to be aggressively rolling out features that make the product more usable for the everyday person, because right now people want to be on Twitter more than ever to see what's going on and try to be following the day-to-day news, which actually, you know, changes by the hour. So it makes sense. Hopefully, I don't know. I don't think this was reflected in their year-end numbers, but hopefully next quarter, you know, it will lead to a boost in users or at least engagement for them.
Yeah, every quarter they add 1%. I mean, it's a tiny growth in the stock market. Yeah. At some point, it's going to start punishing. At some point. Last year, it's going to start punishing them for this, you know, very anemic growth.
Yeah, I think Twitter Moments, I've been really just befuddled by. I love Twitter Moments because when I'm bored, I mean, I have the Times on my phone, I have Washington Post, but you know, Twitter excels at giving those kind of live moments of very specific hashtags.
I stopped clicking on it because it was so useless. But you're right. Of late, I've noticed they've actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I had coffee with someone from Twitter's PR team last week, and that was one thing that they were like, I think you'd be surprised. Like, moments, you know, people kind of talked about, people kind of criticized the feature, but he's like, people are really, really using it. And they're seeing that in their numbers. So that's good. That's great. I don't use it as much, but clearly people are.
Yeah. I'm going to start doing it more. It's got pictures of dogs and babies. And
they all love babies and dogs.
How could you not love that? I mean, that's good stuff. Actually, you know why Twitter Moments is going to succeed? Because there's no politics. It's
they have
like
politics.
Some.
No, there's definitely politics. But
there's a little. When I go to my Facebook feed, it's all politics. Yeah. This is like there's some happy stuff here.
Yeah.
We need just kind of some. It's like, you know, Reader's Digest, lightweight kind of jokey, fun stuff. I like that. All right, Dana Boyd, let's talk a little bit about. By the way, I did want to show this. This is a. Just in case, for those of you who say Twitter, they don't change. Exactly. That egg is only fairly recent. I don't remember this. In the earliest days at Twitter, that was the unknown. Wow. It was some guy with an umbrella and a briefcase. Yeah.
That's very ominous.
That looks like a killer from a horror movie. Like
I know. Yes. It's Freddy Krueger coming for you.
Yeah.
That was back when it was TWTTR, though. Then it was the emoticon, the 0 underscore right. 0 emoticon. Then it was a bird. I don't remember it being the bird. It was the bird for a year.
Oh. Yeah, didn't last long. Yeah.
Then the egg started in 2010, and there was a new svelte egg, which was rolled out in 2014. Well, no, it's a little thinner, too, though. Right? They lost some weight. Yeah. Anyway, Dana Boyd, let's talk about her article. She's saying the fake news problem is more nuanced and complicated than people recognize. We should first mention who Dana Boyd is.
Sure.
She's at Microsoft Research for years, though. She was the queen of social media scholarship, studying young people and how young people used Snapchat and
MySpace is where she started out.
MySpace.
Researching MySpace.
She says Google, this is an article she just published in a back channel, Google and Facebook can't just make fake news disappear. It's too big and messy to solve with algorithms or editors because, this is the most important part, the problem is us.
And by the way, it goes way back. I mean, the term fake news entered our vocabulary sometime this fall. But we've had urban myths. We've had urban legends. We've had, you remember the story about how the post office was going to charge 5 cents per email? Circulated for years.
Bill Gates was going to give you money.
Right, and then Mark Zuckerberg wanted me to pay him $6 a year for a private account. So long before the word fake news came out, I've been writing about these urban myths. And with some of the times they make up Congress people, this email scam, the 5 cent email, there was a Congress person who was going to – you had to write to. He didn't exist. So there's nothing new about these –
there's a little difference.
Oh, there's changes, absolutely.
But and also the people who created those fake news stories did it for the walls, not for money.
Right, exactly.
Or for political gain.
Exactly.
They were just messing with you.
Right. But the difference is people would fall for it and spread it. And that's
what hasn't changed.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. Right. Exactly.
And those stories are easily debunked by Snopes. Or any kind of fact-checking website. But what she seems to be talking about is ones where they just really twist the context around or kind of change the framing of the story in a way that there's at least a shred of something true in there. So it can't be completely debunked, but it's just the interpretation of it. And that's what will be really hard for editors or algorithms to police.
I think there's a
tendency I've noticed in the tech industry that male engineers tend to really believe in technical solutions to social problems. And a lot of these are human problems. They can only be solved through curation. But I think anyone that's talking about the fake news subject and they're not talking about themselves, I think they're really going in the wrong direction. I am vulnerable to this, right? Like a story comes across my feed and it, has some sexism scandal. Like, I want to click on it, right? I want to believe it. And we have to take responsibility in ourselves.
Right.
to kind of take a step back. So what I've tried to do is, you know, especially because, you know, running for office, I talk to conservatives every single day. And, you know, I do make it a point to read reputable conservative news sources now. And I will not click on links from certain publications like Raw Story, just because it may be sensational, but it's not quality journalism. So I think that all of us have to realize that social media really exacerbates the most instinctual parts of our personality. It really taps into that. And we're really getting into this world now where people are not subjected to viewpoints on the other side. Well, and it's not healthy for me. It's not healthy for anyone.
But I think this notion of sharing, I mean, one of the things that I've been harping on is that you don't share a story until you vet a story. It doesn't mean you have to know for absolute certain that there's no inaccuracies in the story. But if I'm going to even like something, I want to know that there's some credibility behind it. And, and you're absolutely right that it's much more subtle than pure fakeness, because people tend to get opinion and fact mixed up, or they tend to have some fact and some fiction. So it's harder to kind of say, and that's one of the things that Facebook is struggling with, and why what they're calling it now is disputed versus fake, because it's hard sometimes to know that this is completely fake and versus.
But almost anything is disputed. If you say something I disagree with, well, factual or not, I might dispute it.
I can watch.
Disputed is about as namby-pamby a description of it as I can find.
I can watch MSNBC and Fox News. And
I dispute that.
But, you know, let them opine all they want. But when they start saying things that are factually
Well, this is the problem. And this is what Boyd says, is that, you know, you can't even define fake news, let alone. She also coined the terms, I think she's coined it, solutionism, to describe what you were just talking about, Brianna, which is and I don't think it's just men engineers. I'm not sure why you say men engineers. Do women engineers not do this? Most technologists think there's a technological solution to everything, right? Is it mostly men?
In my experience of talking to, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, other medium, it is my tendency. I've seen that male engineers generally tend to believe in technological fixes. I think, generally speaking, the women engineers I've met believe more in curation.
You know what this reminds me of is men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Because one of his tenets, and I only know this because I interviewed him 38 years ago, whenever, was that If you sit down and have a conversation about a problem in your life with a guy, the guy will tend to fix it.
Yep.
Say, well, what you need to do is this, and this. And a woman will listen and empathize. So my maybe this is just an example of that.
My wife and I used to get in fights. Whenever the kids would cry, I'd show up with a Band-Aid. She'd show up with a couple of arms and hug
with
them.
Hugs.
But so it's funny. You know, I mentioned earlier that I'm working on this Parents and Teachers Guide to Media Literacy. And on Wednesday, I'm going to be interviewing Mark Brackett and Robin, I can't remember her last name, who run the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. And this was a suggestion of a friend of mine, said you need to think about emotional intelligence and social-emotional learning as part of the battle against fake news. Because why is this successful? It's successful because it stimulates some kind of an emotional response.
So is it some sort of introspective understanding of yourself?
Of yourself and what motivates people to react. And it's not whether a story is true or not. It's how a story affects you.
All propagandists to some degree,
but my initial reaction as Mr. Fix-It was to think, oh, it's all about media literacy. And then it really went off in my head. It's also about emotional intelligence, how we respond. Yeah. And if you look at the success of any demagogue, and I won't mention names, but we know one particular one, what they're good at is getting people riled up. And whether they're using truth to rile them up, and sometimes that works, or mixing truth and fiction, it's all about getting that emotional response. So we have to think that through.
It falls into epistemic closure, which is a psychological phenomenon where you have something, it feeds into your belief system and confirms it. There, we are all susceptible to that. But I think it's really worth saying, if I go and make a tweet tonight and I tweet a really thoughtful New York Times article on like budget negotiations, that's not going to get as much feedback as if I talk about some sexist scandal in the in the technology industry. And it's just like the very model of social media really rewards us going to what my friend Georgia Dow calls the loudest argument. The human mind is attracted to the extreme of any argument. it's why we see movies like going more violent or more sexy or more explosions. We always want to go further. And I think social media is just amplifying some of the worst tendencies in human behavior.
Yeah.
So did I read, I just kind of skimmed because I was short on time, but it sounds like Dana has a very depressing conclusion, which is that it can't be fixed. Did I miss something?
No, I think that's exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
She says the puzzles made visible through fake news are hard. They are socially and culturally hard. They force us to contend with how people construct knowledge and ideas, communicate with others, and construct a society. They're also deeply messy, revealing divisions and fractures in beliefs and attitudes. And that means they're not technically easy to build or implement. If we want technical solutions to complex socio-technical issues, we can't simply throw it over the wall and tell companies to fix the broken parts of society that they made visible and help magnify. I really like that. Mm-hmm. It's not that these companies invented fake news. They just made it visible and helped magnify it.
Right.
We need to work together and build coalitions of groups who do not share the same political and social ideals to address the issues we can all agree are broken. I don't know if we have any much agreement these days anymore in what's broken.
Right.
Otherwise, all we're going to do is try to wage a cultural war with companies as the intermediary and referee, and that sounds like a dreadful idea. I completely agree with her. She articulated something I've thought for a long time but wasn't able to articulate as clearly or as well. So I was very grateful for this article. I think that's exactly right. But you're right, Erin. It doesn't solve it, does it?
No. I mean, yeah, it makes me think back to what I feel like maybe was at the heart of why Facebook was so reticent to take responsibility for the fake news problem, which was the accusations that they were suppressing conservative news outlets. And they had that, I guess, coalition of conservative voices that came and basically complained. And then, you know, Zuckerberg said, don't worry, we're going to make it better. But I sort of wish that that had happened with both sides present, or at least people from kind of all the stakeholders, because maybe that would have, led to Facebook taking more responsibility for this earlier and, working on the problem before the election.
Let me throw a theory at you and see what you guys think of this. Until recently, media was controlled by a small group of people.
Right.
And you and I come,
the good old
Larry,
days,
come from that good old days.
Three nations.
There was kind of a lid placed on the power of media. We've seen it, and I think some of this is in reaction, believe it or not, to World War II and Nazism, where media was really used effectively to manipulate a large audience and to really have horrific effects. And I think that the media people who grew up in that era, the Edward R. Murrows of the world, really understood that the dangerous power that particularly television had and kept a lid on it.
Right.
They were very careful about it. Then what happened when we got into the new internet era was we all got access to media. Mm-hmm. We got access to Twitter and to Facebook and to YouTube, and everybody was creating media without any of this knowledge or understanding of the risks that media brings.
Right.
And so what we've really created in Facebook and Twitter, particularly YouTube somewhat, is a megaphone for emotional, anger and feelings and strife.
Yeah.
And these have become really well-tuned megaphones for our feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a result, I mean, yeah, sure, there's a lot of intellectual, but nobody reads that crap. It's all about, as you pointed out, Brianna, the stuff that gets you. And so we've, in effect, and I think, this is the what happened with the internet, sad to say. I was really excited about the internet at first because I thought this is going to give everybody a voice. It's the ultimate democratizing medium. But what I forgot was that the kind of voice it gave people ultimately could be very destructive because it's so emotional.
It's interesting. I work with CBS News, and I'm very proud to be associated with this company, which dates back
Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite. The Tiffany Network.
But, it's when Walter...
Not anymore.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there is a very, very strong premium. I'm sure this is true, at Fortune and all the media companies, a very strong premium on accuracy. I mean, you'll be fired for knowingly lying or reckless disregard for the truth. And an error, a mistake, is extremely embarrassing.
Right.
And if you make too many of those, you get fired from that as well. And so there is a culture of trying to be accurate, I think, in mainstream
media.
And
it's being buried.
It's being buried, and it's also being ridiculed, and it's being denied. I mean, when Trump goes around calling us, and I put all of us
I do want to say one thing. It's
fake.
A mistake to blame Trump for this. Maybe this is...
Well, he's articulating it.
This is, I think this is the consequence, perhaps, at least short term right now, So, but I don't want to blame him for this. He is the beneficiary of something that has been brewing for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
And it won't just be Donald Trump. This is going to be all over everywhere. It's Gamergate. It's all the harassment that happens on these sites. It's the bullying. It's the live streaming video of people being tortured on Facebook. That's what we're getting. And I don't think you could say it's the Republicans or Donald J. Trump. It is the society we have created with our technology.
But what I am saying, though, is that to demean the entire profession of journalism.
Journalism's dead.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to keep practicing it as long as they let
me. Well, me too, but don't you see that we're in the elephant's graveyard?
I don't know.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. Brianna, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I do think that the left falls into this. And I think that, you know, there are some extreme right-wing outlets like Breitbart that don't take accuracy very seriously. I've been the subject of plenty of bad articles by these sites. And, you know, it's easy to pick on that, but the left absolutely has this problem. I can tell you, as an absolute fact, being a progressive and running for office, anything I say that is this much moderate or gives a little bit of credence to the other side, I get attacked about that. And it is an entire society that's really pushing us to the extremes. I do have one very concrete suggestion that I think would make this better. And what I would like to see Facebook and Twitter and other social networks do is to rate the quality of certain sites and stories when they come out. Generally speaking, if something comes from the Wall Street Journal, I may not like their economic conclusions, but it's going to be well-researched. And I would like to see that story come with a ribbon or some sort of marker, you know, that indicates it is quality content. So I would like to see information from, you know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, LA Times, those kinds of quality news sources. I'd like to see them like elevated in social media. And I would like to see on the left and the right some of these sites that kind of play to our internal biases and epistemic closure. I would like to see them not get that. So it just kind of gives people a baseline.
The thing that I fear, though, is that we at this point have gotten so polarized that we aren't even hearing each other.
I believe it.
And so the people who are reading the Washington Post and the New York Times are one group of people. And but that's one group, and they're not hearing the other group, and the other group's not hearing them.
Right.
And I don't think there is a conversation going on at all anymore. It's just a bunch of people shouting.
And I think that's one of the problems with the internet. You know, back in the days, and I don't want to go back to the good old days, but back in the days when we had three television networks, and every city had two newspapers, we had a very set number of people giving us facts, and we should agree on facts.
Yeah, and it was in some respects the bad old days. It was William Randolph Hearst who created a war against Spain out of thin air.
That's right.
So it wasn't always positive.
And you're absolutely right. And newspapers were politically biased. People would take the Democratic paper, the Republican paper. So it's not
even
about,
then there was that polarization.
It's not about, but we pretty much most of the time agreed on the facts. Most of the time, not all the time. Now you're absolutely right. The New York Times breaks the story, and I read it, and I say, wow, this is amazing. This is important stuff.
And everybody else?
And the other people are either ignoring it or considering it fake.
Right, it's fake news.
It's fake news. You know?
I think that whoever said it got a lot of grief, but we are in a post-fact era.
Right, exactly.
In many respects. Aaron, I'm sorry.
Brianna, I really like your suggestion for, you know, adding a marker to stories that are trusted and of quality. And the reason I think that Facebook hasn't done that yet is because there's this fear. It's kind of like the net neutrality argument. Like there's this fear that there's no room for a company like Business Insider or Engadget or any sort of new blog to kind of come up and become trusted because the Journal and the New York Times and all of the old institutions will just continue to hold on to their power, and Facebook wants to be seen as neutral. I'm really curious to see if that will change, but I think there would be a lot of pushback when that starts.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's a very difficult problem to solve, and you know, you have to say this all the time. Engineering is all about compromises. If you do one thing, it's going to have trade-offs, and our system now is clearly not working. Like, something's got to change.
Yes.
I don't know what the answer is, though. I mean, I really don't. I feel like this is...
Well, Leo, you're an example of somebody who created his own successful media company, and that wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago. Right?
Exactly. That's why I celebrate this.
And I would hate to see you not get the badge because, you know, you don't have 40 years of...
I benefited greatly from the democratization of media.
Exactly.
I couldn't work in mainstream media anymore, so I created my own thing. But I still fear that the side effects that we've created are terrifying.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is to it. But that we're going to, on that note, pause. I do have, and by the way, this is an example of how the internet is so great. Gollum in the chat room did an interesting observation. We were showing the anonymous icons of Twitter, right? And this is in the early days. And we couldn't really figure out, this guy carrying an umbrella and a suitcase, what is that? Gollum figured it out. It's Michael Douglas from Falling Down carrying a shotgun. Is that not the same?
Wow.
It's a little changed, but not much.
Wow.
The internet. Isn't it amazing?
Oh, my.
See, this is why we... I doubt the Twitter guys even knew what they were up to, but somebody in there did. Somebody was subversive. It's some amazing designer said, I have an idea.
Wow.
Thank you, Gollum, for catching that. We had a great week this week on Twitter. Lots of fun. I wasn't here, but I understand good things happened. That's why we've made this small movie to brief me what I missed.
Maybe previously missed on Twitter.
The company is Digivina. I don't know if you remember this. Make your own vinyl record by using all the old plastic bottles
in
your house.
I love this idea.
You could be the first podcast
on vinyl.
Security Now.
Tavis Ormandy, our favorite security researcher, tweeted shortly after toweling himself off, I had an epiphany in the shower and realized how to get code execution in LastPass. This is apparently very sophisticated, but also that's going to require some re-engineering.
The new screensavers.
I'm about to hop on Galactic Attack. It's a converted Kong roller coaster that brings a little Samsung Gear VR into the action. Mixed reality experience. Yep, we're in space.
Okay.
And we're about to die.
Ah! Yeah! Ah!
Wow, this is really weird.
Twit. Technology for your eyes and ear holes.
Digivina is an April Fool's gag. I can't leave you hanging like this. There's no such thing.
Aww. Although,
if I were you, it was believable, wasn't it?
It was cool idea.
Yeah. You take your old bottles and turn them into a...
I love the idea of a vinyl, like a podcast on vinyl. You just send a new one out every day.
I'm going to do that. I know. I'm finding a way to do that. Jason Howell, what's ahead this week?
Here's a look at just a few of the stories that we'll be watching in the week ahead. On Monday, April 3rd, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services will suspend expedited processing of H-1B petitions for up to 6 months, which could have a dramatic effect on the hiring practices of technology companies throughout the year. On Wednesday, April 5th, Huawei is launching its, well, worst-kept secret, the Honor 8 Pro. A Russian Huawei site inadvertently spilled the beans on the 5.7-inch premium-spec'd Android device that we still don't know price or whether it'll be released in the U.S. like the Honor 8 was last year, which, by the way, I loved in the $400 range. And on Thursday, April 6th, the UK gets its long overdue release of the Google Home Assistant as well as the Google Wi-Fi router. Each device runs €129 with a two-pack of the Google Wi-Fi running €229. That's a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join Megan Maroney and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv.
Thank you, Jason.
Why is he putting euros for the UK price? Don't they use... Pounds. In the UK?
I guess the Brexit memo didn't come out for Jason.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. Doesn't everybody think in euros? I do. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at ZipRecruiter. If you're the person who has to do the hiring in your company, and you are if you're the sole proprietor, you know this is the thing you'd least like to do in your business is find the right employee. And yet it probably is your single most important job, right? The right hire can change your company for the best, for the, you know, really make a difference. A wrong hire could bring your company to its knees. So let's assume, and I think it's a safe assumption, somewhere out there is just the right person for the job you want to fill. How do you reach that person? Which job board is that person looking at? When do they look at it? With ZipRecruiter, you don't have to worry about that. You'll post to 200-plus job boards with one click of the mouse at ZipRecruiter.com. And I love this. You're going to get, not only are you going to get your message out to all those job boards and Twitter and Facebook, but you're also going to get all the resumes pre-formatted by ZipRecruiter so they're easy to read. All the applicants filter into the ZipRecruiter interface. No more calls to your phone or emails to your inbox. You can go right to the interface. You can have screening questions for them, multiple choice, yes, no, even essay questions that help you narrow it down, screen out the people who aren't right, rank the rest, and hire the right person fast. This is the most efficient way to do the toughest but most important job in your business. You're going to love ZipRecruiter, used by Fortune 100 companies, thousands of small and medium businesses, over a million companies, including Twit, use ZipRecruiter to fill those positions. You should try it free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Twit right now and have a free trial. Some ZipRecruiter.com/Twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for making our podcast.
That is the hardest job for any business owner.
It is, isn't it?
Good people. That is all you do in a team that lives or dies based on who you hire.
How old is Space Cat Gal? How long have you been doing that?
Well, my studio's been around since 2010. Like, we saw the percentage of women gamers just exploding. So I was all in. I'm like, it's time to launch my own game studio.
And how many people work for you?
Well, it depends. Game development is when you, depending on where you are in the process, you bring people in and then you let them go when the job is done. This is very sad about the game industry. So depending on where you are, we may have 5 people working for us or 15.
So you're always going up and down, and that, yeah, you understand. Yeah. We're a small business, too. We have 25 employees. And boy, I shouldn't talk about this in public, but the worst thing in business is having to fire somebody.
Oh, I hate it.
It's the worst thing. I've had to do it. So bad.
Yeah. It's miserable, and you feel terrible. And it's, and you know that, I mean, it's, you're not insensitive to what's happening. This is terrible. Mm-hmm. I've been fired. I don't like to do that.
Yep.
But at the same time, you have to sometimes. So that's why hiring is important, because, right? You don't want to hire somebody you're going to have to fire.
And it's also a very expensive mistake when you hire the wrong person.
Oh,
well, I know that well, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
Stressful for everybody.
Again, I could go on and on, because I've I've had employees who've cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars. It is not a good thing.
Same.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know why. Got an. Oh, yeah. By the way, Brianna does a very good podcast on Relay.fm that everybody should be listening to. I hope people know about Brianna's show. It's called Disruption. Tell us what it's about.
Well, I tell you, that's the one I did. That one with Georgia, it's kind of more of a social show. Like, we look at how technology is affecting people, and we have different perspectives. The show I'm really proud of is it's called Rocket on Relay FM.
Oh man, my wife loves that show. By the way,
she is a huge
Rocket fan.
I love your wife. She's awesome. Everybody should follow her on Twitter. Rocket is a great show because it's all women. It's me. It's Christina Warren, who has so much talent.
We love her.
Like, every single week I do a show with Christina, I leave and I'm just jealous of how much talent and intellect she has. Yep. She's amazing. And we do it with Simone de Rochefort, who's a video content producer at Polygon. She's younger, is just super enthusiastic, and makes the show super weird and uncomfortable. But what I love about the show is, we talk so much about women and tech issues. Rocket is a show where it's just women talking about technology and bringing our perspective to it. And we don't talk about politics a lot, and there's nothing else like it in the tech world.
Yeah. Lisa loves, she's always saying, you got to listen to Rocket. I said, but it's for women. I'm a guy. I don't listen to any podcast. I don't have time. I'm too busy.
Yeah.
I'm too busy making them. But I will listen to Rocket, because I love all three of you, and I think that's what a great idea for a show. Relay. I always get this wrong. Relay.fm, RELAY.fm. I think it's psychological. I don't want to promote Mike Hurley at all. at all. He's too darn good. He's got too many shows I wish I had. And of course, with us, Erin Griffith. She writes for Fortune at Fortune.com. And don't forget her daily newsletter if you're an investor, a must read. Where can they find that?
The term sheet, you can go to fortune.com/get-term-sheet and sign up for it there. And it's a daily listing of every single M&A transaction that happened in the last 24 hours. So that is a lot. And then also my commentary.
Wow.
You're busy.
Any big mergers and acquisitions in the last week that people missed, maybe missed the big story?
Let's see. Toshiba is... selling its chip business.
We're hearing rumors that Apple might be looking at Toshiba, right?
Really?
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
There's a SoftBank is just throwing money away faster than it can light it on fire. They're trying to invest in WeWork. They're maybe going to give $6 billion to Didi, which would be the largest venture capital investment of all time.
That's the Uber of China, right?
Yep.
Didi. Actually, this Toshiba thing is interesting because it's not just Apple, but Google and Amazon apparently also looking at this. Why would these companies want to make their own flash RAM? What would be the advantage to that? I could see Apple. They probably sell more flash memory than anybody in the world, right?
Well, they could improve the quality, theoretically, and cut down the cost.
But Google's not known as a manufacturing company. They didn't even make the Pixel. I mean, they designed the Pixel, but
LG. LG built this one.
Yeah. They owned Motorola and did very badly.
Right.
Lost
they don't
a lot
want to
of
own hardware.
That, so they don't want hardware.
And Amazon is not. I mean, I guess Amazon, because they make a lot of tablets. I don't know. It seems like Apple would be the most logical of.
They bought that Israeli company a few years ago that specialized in this technology. I bet it's more about the patents if I had to.
Yeah, it's always about the patents, isn't it, these days? Yeah. Apple, though, I have to say, has, I think, learned a lesson that they want to make everything that they sell, right?
They want to control the entire ecosystem.
Control it from beginning to end.
Right.
And they've also become a lot more acquisitive under Tim Cook. They used to really never acquire companies, and now it seems like they're snapping up lots of little ones and also not scared to do some big deals.
Remember Andy Rubin? He's the guy who created Android, sold the company to Google, did pretty well, then left. Actually, what he did is first he went to robots, and then he left Google. He's been working on a phone. They call it Essential. And guess who leaked out that the Essential will be an Android phone? Eric Schmidt, of all people, former Google CEO. He tweeted, it's an Android phone. I don't know what Eric's interest is in all this, but it's another one of these bezel-less, very thin frame phones.
Surely that's not an accidental leak. Like anything that he's tweeted, that he's revealing has been, vetted by the lawyers and the PR team and both sides involved. Like probably he wanted to quell any possible rumors that Andy Rubin is working on a new competitor to Android that he'll sell to Amazon or whoever wants a new operating system.
When are we going to get to the point when we really don't care about a new phone? Will that ever happen?
I think I got to that point a few years ago. I told Lisa, I don't want to buy any more phones. She said, you have to.
When's the last time
you have to buy every new phone that comes out? You have to.
Well, you do, but the average,
Average Joe doesn't care.
I haven't bought a television set now in 6 years, right? I probably should buy a ultra high definition TV set at some point.
It's your fault that Sony and Samsung, they're going out of business. They're losing money. You got to buy a TV every few years. That's your job.
But, phones, I don't know. I find it like even, phones.
It's boring.
I mean, sit there and we obsess over the size of the
bezel. What's more
bezel.
Boring than phones? Tablets.
Tablets.
Boring.
Oh, they're practically dead.
Boring.
I have to tell you, if you Google this, Google my name and the word iPad underwhelming. And you will see that in 2010, I declared the iPad as underwhelming. And I was initially wrong in terms of market share. See that? The iPad is underwhelming.
it's so funny because
2010.
You were not alone. A lot of people said this.
Yeah.
And I took great pride in the fact that I said this is the day. I remember sitting out front of Yerba Buena Center on the day that Steve Jobs. Yeah, you came over and talked. We were sitting in lawn chairs. And I remember vividly saying, this is the product Steve Jobs was born to make. This is what he made Apple for. This is going to revolutionize computing. And it turned, and I was right for a moment, and I was wrong in the long run. You were right in the long run.
I was right in the long run, but wrong in the moment, right? The sales were phenomenal, and I was almost ready to write a retraction. And then, eventually iPad sales started to dwindle.
John C. Dvorak said nobody wants to buy a mouse. Someday he'll be right.
Part of the reason is these, right? The phones are bigger and the laptops are lighter. Right?
Yeah.
So
I think Apple deserves a lot of responsibility here. I mean, yeah, Leah, look at that, the machine in front of you. That's the Microsoft Surface
Isn't
Studio.
Isn't this awesome?
It's awesome.
Sexy. I want one of those so badly. But the reason I want it is because it has professional Photoshop and Illustrator Premiere. Right. And Apple has really abrogated any kind of responsibility with leading the pro app market on the iPad. And, you know, like there's a point where Pages and Numbers and Spreadsheets, it just doesn't cut it for pro users. And I think they had a really great product with the iPad Pro, but they have they've not developed any of the software ecosystem around it. And I think it's 100%.
Why not? What's going on at Apple? Why haven't they kept this leadership?
I think on the PC side, I mean, I'm for the first time ever carrying around a Windows laptop, Hewlett Packard, right? Oh. I can do this with it.
In fact, phones are boring and tablets are boring,
it
turns out the most exciting category right now is laptops.
And Windows.
And Windows machines.
That's the irony of it, right? We just about declared Microsoft dead. I remember when I was at Walt Busberg and Kara Swisher run this conference. It used to be called All Things D.
Yeah.
Now it's called Code. And I remember when, I can't remember who it was, I think it talked about the most important companies in the industry, and it was Apple, Amazon and Google, and Microsoft wasn't on the list.
Right.
Microsoft,
I remember that,
has its mojo back. It's back on the list.
They're really doing good work. Yeah. The HoloLens, I think you have to say this. So much of the work that I've seen done on HoloLens, it's really worth noting there are a lot of women engineers on that team. And I think it's just, it's one of the best leg companies, project teams I've seen at Microsoft. It's an amazing product. It's got a long way to go. But, you know, at GSX, my game studio, we've got Oculus Vive, you know, Gear VR. We've looked at all of it. And I feel strongly Microsoft has the best product in that space by a wide margin.
Is it because it's the best product or because they went for AR
right.
and all the rest are VR?
That's it. Yeah.
And by the way, that's interesting to hear from a game developer because VR is a great gaming platform.
So is AR.
Yeah, not as great. I think AR has more potential in a lot of other realms as well. And when you're gaming, I think you want immersive. I don't think it's a problem you can't see the world around you.
What's the one that everybody's playing, that Nintendo?
Pokemon Go.
Pokemon is an AR game.
It's quasi-AR.
Quasi-AR. Very poor man's AR.
Somebody made the case, though, you know, because everybody's waiting for Apple to drop the other shoe on AR. And somebody made the case that Pokemon Go was actually even though it's not really AR, it was very important in getting people to kind of accustom to the idea that they could see the street through their phone and there'd be a Pokemon on it.
Right.
That's a first step in getting a customer's used to this idea. So here's the question. Apple, you know, they're making so much money on the iPhone. It's understandable they might kind of let computing slip a little bit and focus on mobile. Everybody's saying Apple's putting all this money into AR some say this year. I think the general consensus is next year Apple will have a product, an augmented reality product. Can they make that magic happen one more time?
Leo, you've got to let me say this. People don't talk about this issue with Apple developing an AR product, and that is thinking about how extremely weak Apple's 3D technologies are. If you go into the iPhone SDK and you look at the things they have built around 3D, it is baby talk in game developer terms. You know, everybody out there is doing serious 3D work on the iPad. Like, look at Vainglory, probably the most gorgeous game on iPad that's made with the proprietary engine. Most people have, like, my studio goes to Unreal because Apple's tools are unsatisfactory. And look at their big gambit with Metal. Metal is a great technology, but where is the software actually using it? It doesn't exist. So in the meantime, they've got this technology built on the OpenGL layer, which is very thick and inefficient. We see a 25% decrease in frame rate in using the exact same software on a Mac, and then that same Mac running Windows will get 25% better frame rate because Apple's implementation of it is
that because poor. Apple went all in on OpenGL when the rest of the world was going to DirectX, and it turned out OpenGL sucked.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. But it's just
so that's just a bad choice. That's like Sprint choosing WiMAX instead of LTE. Right. That's a bad choice. The kind of choice that haunts a company for years. Yep. But it's not. You know, it's just a mistake.
So if they're going to be bringing this product out, they're going to have to really get serious about 3D technologies.
Interesting.
I don't like they blindsided us with Swift. Nobody saw that coming. So maybe they have, you know, a group of people that are working to really build up Apple's 3D technologies. But somebody that ships mobile games on Apple devices, there's a reason we use Unreal Engine. It's because Apple's tech doesn't have it.
Everybody uses Unreal Engine.
Yep.
Does Unity have good 3D support?
It's solid. It's not as advanced.
It's cross-platform, which is nice.
It's cross-platform. The reason they've gotten a lot of adoption is it's simpler, and they've done a really good job at reaching out to universities, so a lot of students know how to use it. Yeah. But, you know, we prefer Unreal because it's better.
Well, maybe Apple also suffered. This is an interesting. Somebody in the chat room is suggesting that Apple didn't have to worry about a 3D engine because you don't game so much on a Macintosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right. So there was no pressure on them to create something good, and that ended up hurting the tablet as well, iOS as well, because they didn't have to develop these technologies.
Didn't they claim that iOS was actually one of the most popular gaming platforms in the world?
But it's casual.
It is. Casual gaming, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is the most popular gaming platform in the world.
That's what you developed for exclusively, right?
That's true. 40% of the profits in our industry are on mobile devices. But, you know, this hurts Apple in the long term. Look at the Apple TV. I think it's really hard to look at that, you know, product and not see it as a failure, because the apps on it do not make money for developers. And, you know, it's just not a great place for developers to go unless they're porting iPhone games over to it. So, you know, Apple's, you know, weak leadership in this area is really coming back to haunt them, I believe.
Interesting. Now, I have to point out, Androids know better.
That's true. You don't have to sell me. It's a real nightmare.
Yeah. So there really is. How about the Nintendo Switch? There's a mobile platform for 3D.
Yeah.
I bet that's a pretty good platform.
We're looking at it. It's really exciting. I'm not convinced that it doesn't have fundamental hardware issues like with the Bluetooth controller. But, you know, the Tegra processor underneath it, like, it's a very solid product from Nintendo. And I'm really looking forward to getting one.
This is vainglory. You mentioned you think this is the best. Nobody can see it. Yeah, it really is amazing. But and what engine is this using? Is this
that's a proprietary engine that they wrote themselves. So, but look at it, like the particle effects, the animation.
Really nice. Yeah.
There's really not great tools in Apple's iPhone SDK to do things like that.
Interesting. This is why I love getting developers on. Because you see it in a completely different way than end users do. We don't know what's under the hood. We don't know if this is good or bad.
It's difficult stuff,
Yeah. Really,
I'm looking forward to you making speeches from the floor of Congress with this level of technical,
That'd be awesome.
I mean, you'd have your own C-SPAN channel.
Resolved. OpenGL shall no longer be used on any platform. The ayes have it.
I would pass a bill outlawing Flash. That would be really good for the world.
Would you please? Do that. Yes, I'll vote for that.
It's finally on its last legs. You saw that FedEx is offering people $5 rebate if they turn on Flash in their browser because Flash is now disabled in Chrome and Firefox. And but unfortunately, I guess FedEx can't figure out how to get a developer to not use Flash. So they're so Flash dependent, they're offering you a $5 rebate to turn it back on.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, I had to turn it back on just yesterday because I was watching some video I needed to watch.
There are 69 new emojis, and we've got them for you here, including, I think, one we're going to take a little bit of credit for. This is the Unicode committee. There's an emoji committee. We talked to one of the members of the committee when he was out here in San Francisco. Many of these have been launched now in iOS 10.3. And one of them is a milkshake. And I have to give credit to our own Tanya Hall, who talked to the guy when he was visiting us. He said, why is there not a milkshake emoji? There's other, there's pizza, there's hot dogs, there's hamburgers now. And there is now a milkshake emoji. So I think we have to thank our own Tanya Hall for making that happen. There's a bearded person, not a bearded man. That's a bearded person. What? Now, this is an interesting choice. This breastfeeding one is a little controversial. By the way, remember, when you see an emoji, that there is kind of a reference design, but every platform, Twitter, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, all have their own design. But this was a controversial one because this is, by the way, weird. Originally, the breastfeeding emoji didn't have a head because they didn't want to say it was a man or a woman.
Well,
they wanted to be gender neutral on the breastfeeding emoji. Men can breastfeed, I was told. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Not all men. Small percentage. But it was so creepy to have an emoji, breastfeeding emoji with no head. It was totally out of a horror film. I guess they've decided that, well, okay, we'll give it. But I bet you there's a man and a woman. I bet you.
Now, does Congress have to approve these emojis?
No.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Just the Unicode consortium.
Okay, I feel very strongly that the peach, the double-rounded peach emoji needs to be part of our...
I was very disappointed that they kind of took some of the rounding out of the peach.
Yeah, I think it's very sad.
We need an eggplant. We need a peach. Otherwise, how are we going to use, you know, be sexy emojiing? Mm-hmm. That's very important. Yeah. Glad you brought that up, Brianna. These are some of the other new emojis. There's an elf. There's a genie. There's a vampire.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That's like sexy.
Wow.
There's a fairy.
A male fairy and a female fairy.
Of course. Fairies come in all kinds. Merpersons, mermaids. I've never seen a male mermaid, but I've always hoped to see one. There's a climber. Person in lotus position.
That looks like the breastfeeding woman, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the same one.
Yeah.
There's only one woman.
She gets around.
She gets around. Sled. Yeah. Oh, this is for our friends in Canada. A curling stone. Now, wait a minute. That's a little, I think, nation-specific.
Have you thought of launching this?
Seems like a rare use case.
A whole show dedicated to this.
We did a whole show dedicated to this. We did. We spent a lot of time on the emojis. I'm the most
about
used.
A weekly show
used.
Every week.
You know? Oh, Emoji Week.
Yeah, Emoji
Week. Emojis this week. This weekend, hedgehog emoji.
Yeah.
All the things you can do, T-Rex like that.
Good.
Yeah. There are in total, how many, Karsten? 50 new emojis? 59 new emojis.
69 new emojis.
Cricket? That's interesting. Giraffe? So these have been in the brewing for a long time.
Zebra.
Yeah. Okay. This could really extend the show for a long time. So I'm not.
A sandwich. That's what I want. Yeah.
Sandwich.
Yeah.
69. There's 69 new emojis. Takeout box.
But it's a Chinese takeout box, right?
In one reference design, yes.
Okay.
But, you know, even the milkshake, by the way, is in a milkshake. See, it's a cup with straw, so you can determine what else is in there.
Okay.
And that maybe that looks like, say, a McDonald's cup, but, you know, that's Twitter gets to do something different. That's just the reference design.
Gotcha.
I want a developer emoji. I want a man and a woman developer with coffee cups just piled up all over their desk.
Head on the desk, right?
Yeah, that would be great.
And they should be wearing carpal tunnel braces.
That would be very accurate. Yeah.
Yes, to make it real.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations to Andy Bio. What a saga this is. Andy Bio founded a site many years ago. We all used it on the early days of the internet called upcoming.org. Remember, this was the first kind of event site on the internet. 2 years after it was founded in the early 2000s, Yahoo bought it, which, of course, is the beginning of the end for many a great site. In 2013, Yahoo shut upcoming.org down. But that's not the end of the saga. Then Andy Bio created a Kickstarter campaign to buy it back and revive upcoming.com. He raised $30,000 in 90 minutes, $100,000 total. 4 years later, upcoming.com is back. Not only that, he restored the archives. So you can, it's actually upcoming.org. So you can see things we did back in the 2000s.
Cool. You know what he paid Yahoo for it?
What?
Hopefully not. No, I don't know.
No, nothing.
Oh, good.
What did Yahoo want?
Hopefully.
A quarter. I don't think he... I don't know. That's a good question.
I hope he didn't have to pay a
lot for it. I hate to tell him that he has some new competition in the intervening 15 years.
Oh, no.
There are a lot of new event sites that have sprung up to take his place. I hope he has some new feature ideas.
There's Eventbrite, and there are a lot of them. Upcoming, though, I will use Upcoming just because that was the original.
But this looks a little like an old site.
It does, doesn't it?
It's okay.
It's kind of like Delicious, another site that Yahoo practically killed.
It's probably a lot faster.
Palmer Luckey is leaving Oculus. What do you think of this? What do you make of this? Palmer Luckey was a teenager who dreamed of VR.
Facebook PR people have to be celebrating this. I mean, they've been trying to distance themselves from him for quite some time. When it came out that he was the one who was behind all of these crass memes, and not to mention their lawsuit that they've been dealing with ZeniMax. Obviously, he's at the center of it. They're very terse. We wish him the best statement with no why behind it. I think was telling if you read between the lines.
I got to tell you, I got to tell you, he got $2 billion when Facebook bought Oculus.
Yeah. Well, he personally did get that, but he did get a lot of money.
I think he can live on that for a while.
He got a lot of it, I would guess. Enough that he probably doesn't have to work. If I were Palmer Luckey, I would take it a little easy by now.
I think it's tempting to look at this through like the social disaster story, and certainly the stuff he did was, you know, it didn't look good. But I think the bigger issue here is, you know, Oculus's launch was really blown in a way that really jeopardizes the long-term health of that company.
Yes,
and I say that as someone that develops with VR. Oculus Touch is the best product on the market for interfacing in VR. It didn't launch with it. It launched after the fact. And you have games like Robo Recall, which are exceptional on the system, which have not gotten any attention at all. So you look at this with, you know, just problems recruiting developers, problems of really getting a solid dev kit out there to people, problems with, you know, really getting a marketplace, problems with attracting a user base, and it just needs a new direction. So I'm happy to put all of my social differences with him aside and say someone's got to take responsibility to this blown launch with this very important product. And I clearly think there's new leadership needed there.
What's the best game on VR, whether it's Vive or Oculus?
Robo Recall.
Really?
It's excellent. Yeah, you're dodging, you're shooting bullets, you grab robots and throw them into teleporters. It's really amazing.
I'll have to try it.
Yeah.
That's an epic game.
It is. It is made with Unreal Engine.
Interesting. Do you spend a lot of time in the, what do we call it, in the hood? In the visor?
I do. You know, we have an entire room at my studio that's dedicated to it. I have a really cool, tech demo that we've been working on that I'm putting aside to go run for Congress.
Wow.
It's really sad because I think it's some really fun technology, but I'm just not going to feel great about developing pleasant distractions for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I know Georgia and Anthony are huge. They have a dedicated VR room in their house.
They do. They're talking about buying a new house.
They're going to buy a new house for a VR room to have another view. Because right now, she plays downstairs against him. He's upstairs. Crazy. Crazy. I'm not sold on VR. I'm much more excited about AR.
I'm not either.
I agree.
I can't wait.
I'm not willing to invest in a high-end VR system and the room it takes in the house.
Right.
And so I've got the Oculus VR and I've got a few other devices, but they're all fun. But after a while, I kind of move on.
I have a game room that has Vive set up, you know, has the sensors nailed to the wall and everything, but we don't do it
that
often.
Yeah.
I don't need them.
Yeah.
I think it's, I think that we haven't seen the use case proven for it yet.
Right.
So there it is.
I agree. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, it was April Fool's Day yesterday. Yep. I'm going to let each of you pick your favorite. I hate April Fool's Day.
Me too.
This show, the day after April Fool's, is so hard to do because is George Takei running for Congress or not? I don't know. Because everybody, everything you read, you have to filter.
Right.
Did Apple buy Tesla? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to take a break and come back. Did Google buy Spotify? Your favorite April Fool's jokes when we return. This is no joke. Stamps.com. If you are in the business where you mail stuff and you are still going to the post office to get stamps, to buy stamps, or worse, you have a postage meter that you bring to the post office. It looks like it's a nuclear containment vessel it weighs about 40 pounds. You bring it to the post office to get postage put on it and you're buying special ink. You're crazy. That's not the 21st century. Stamps.com, my friends. Use your computer, your printer to print real U.S. postage as needed. And it does so much more. It really actually solves your fulfillment problem. In fact, you could do anything you would do at the post office, including mail stuff, from your desk with stamps.com. No equipment to lease, no long-term commitments. They'll even send you a digital scale, a USB scale that calculates exactly the right postage. No more guessing. When I buy stuff on Etsy or eBay, I'll get a brown paper wrapped package in twine. It's kind of lumpy and funny shaped. And then there's about 20 extra stamps stuck on it because I know they didn't want to, you know, they weren't sure. Stamps.com, you print out the label right for the packaging. It even fills out the forms you need, the customs forms, the express mail forms. You get discounts you can't get at the post office because, by the way, the post office loves Stamps.com. They want you to use Stamps.com, so they give you discounts you can't get anywhere else. It is awesome, and right now you can try it free. In fact, it's a great deal, a four-week trial, plus $55 in free postage coupons you can use over the first few months of your account, plus the digital scale. A great deal. Stamps.com. You got to try it. If you're doing mailing at all, go to stamps.com, click the upper right-hand corner. There's a microphone up there, and enter TWIT as the offer code. This is a $110 bonus value and a free trial of stamps.com. We use it like crazy. It's the only way to do mailing. It makes you look professional. You can print right on the envelope, too, with your logo and everything. Stamps.com. All right, there were some good April Fool's pranks. There were also some bad ones. I'm pretty sure George Takei is not running for Congress, but Brianna Wu is.
Yes, that's right.
Although you said you would vote for him. I would.
Yeah, right? Sure.
Of course I would. You know, what I thought was really interesting, the reason I fell for this and even retweeted it is, you know, he ran for, he was thinking about running back in the 70s. He ultimately had to pull his candidacy because Star Trek was still in the air. And because of equal time laws, they would have to give the other person a ton of time on the air as well. So I completely fell for this, and I am vulnerable, and people called me on it. I would love to see him run.
I'll confess, when I first read it, I forgot it was April Fool's Day. I did believe it, and I was thrilled. I didn't retweet it. Thank God. I didn't fall. But I was thrilled. I thought, I love George. Who doesn't love George Takei? You know, and he's, you know, he's openly gay. He's funny, smart. He understands technology. And he's very political. And I just would love it if he would run. So, George, maybe you should run. No equal time problems these days, but it was an April Fool's joke. What else? What was your favorite,
Well,
Larry?
Well, Google Clouds, Google Wind, where they're going to be able to use the cloud to predict clouds and actually use windmills to clear the sky. But I have to say, I put on Facebook that yesterday, I called it Fake News Day. This is a day when it's okay.
It's okay. Get it out
news.
Of your
one,
system.
One day a year.
Do done. It now. This right. is the Get Wind. This was Google Netherlands. Yeah. One of the problems right. with Google is they have every Google division across the world does their own.
Exactly.
April Fool's joke. In fact, at some point, I feel like Google is spending more time on April Fool's jokes than figuring out which messaging program we're going to use. Maybe spend a little time more on the messaging mess up there, Google.
That's a sick burn.
Hint, hint. Brianna, did you have a favorite April Fool's joke from the tech community?
It was George Takei, like I said.
Good one.
I kind of closed my browser and said, you know, this is not a good day for me to be.
yes. So. We should make this the new thing. This is the day you disconnect, is April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
No screen day. How about you, Aaron Griffith? Your favorite April?
I actually fell for the George Takei thing because I only got the Nuzzle push notification to the original article and all the tweets around it. It was still so early that everyone was saying, oh my God, yes, this is so awesome. Uh-huh. And then, like, it's, you know, obviously later it was disproven, but I never got a second push notification telling me that.
It's the perfect fake news story because we all want to believe it, right?
Well, that's what fake news is, right?
Yep.
It reinforces our bias, what we want.
But it also wasn't like a piece of news that I feel obligated to cover, which is what I find so infuriating about this, is when you get something that actually looks like a real press release from the company, everything about it seems legit, and then you still have to kind of ask yourself, oh, wait, no, this is probably not real, and I won't cover it. I was so glad it was on a Saturday this year.
We all saw Google Gnome, which is the outdoor version of Google Home. That was a very funny video.
Yeah,
I have to say, though, I want to give props to Snapchat. Because they did very subtle and a very good. This was the Snapchat filter yesterday. It took your Snapchat picture and made it look like it was on Instagram. and note the likes from my mom.
So good.
Now that's my kind of April Fool's joke, right? Snapchat's Instagram filter. Of course, they're.
On one level, you want to say, no, don't ever let Facebook see that you've gotten to them or that their copying has actually gotten to you and that you care. But on the other hand, it's now so blatant and just lame that I appreciate the clapback.
I do too. Yeah. I think it's so awesome.
I once wrote an April Fool's column about eye insurance predicting that Steve Jobs was going to launch a health insurance company just for iPhone users. and the theory being that
that's,
you know,
believable.
This would be and actually I got
it's a self-selecting
so much,
group.
I got so much mail from people who believed it. that, you know, complaining. No, we're really angry at the fact that, that Apple was entering the healthcare field.
Did anybody watch Will Arnett on Netflix Live, their new live stream?
No.
Yeah.
I heard about it. It was supposedly very funny.
Yeah. Is it over? Can I watch it on Netflix now? Because it was a joke, obviously. There's no face Netbook live stream. and apparently he was just narrating a live stream of life's biggest thrills, including toasters toasting, grass growing, and fans blowing. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I think we should call it a day.
Okay.
Larry Maggot, always a pleasure to have you in, in studio, even better. And we're going to give you a plug for connectsafely.org.
Thank you.
Safekids.com. Anything else you want to promote?
Going to larrysworld.com. They're all
interchangeable. That's your website.
That's my personal website, but yeah.
And I use that when we, you know, we have a 14-year-old. We wanted a contract for internet use. You know, bet. I went right to connectsafely.org.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And by the way, on connectsafely.org, we took a swipe at the congressional privacy vote that happened the other day. So, and I do suggest you listen to the podcast with Mignon from the Federal Communications
Commission. That's a great get.
Yeah,
because she's a commissioner, and
she was
and
good.
I thought I always liked her a lot. I hope she's. I doubt she'll stay on the commission. Although, weirdly, you have to appoint an equal number of Democrats and Republicans. So
right, but right now the chair is a Republican.
Is a Republican, yeah. As is always the case, it's the party in power.
That's right.
Speaking of podcasts, Brianna Wu has a couple of great ones. We've got to highly recommend. You go to relay.fm and check out. What's the one that I should be watching?
I think Rocket is awesome.
I think Rocket's
you're a Georgia
pretty good.
Dow fan, so I'm Disruption's also good.
I confess a soft spot for Georgia too. So
who doesn't like Georgia?
I'll subscribe
to
both.
She's awesome.
Who doesn't? You got time for two? Come on.
I got a long way home. I can listen to a podcast.
And BriannaWu2018.com, especially if you're in the Massachusetts 8th.
That's true.
You're going to be able
true.
To vote for her. Is there a there's a primary first, right?
There's a primary. I'm trying to primary Stephen Lynch. I'm not really a big fan of his. But, you know, any of your listeners, for real, you know, if you want better tech policy, go to supportbrianna.com. You know, I'm trying to not get in the pocket of, you know, corporate money as I'm doing this. And, you know, what I want to do is make technologists the next really sought after demographic with, you know, political movements. Like donate to candidates that have good tech policy. And you will see tech policy improve, I can guarantee you.
And when is the date for the primary?
It's next year, so I believe it's in October. So okay. I've got about a year and a half to go and shake about 30,000 hands.
Wow. And yeah, I'm going to go over and donate because I like the idea of small donors supporting a very important candidacy to bring some sense into Congress.
Bernie Sanders did well with it.
Yeah, good luck to you, Brianna. Yep. I think that's great.
Thank
you. It was great having you on. I've been trying to get you on for ages, but it was all in my head. Turned out all I had to do was email you. So thanks for joining us. I keep every day I would think I got to get Brianna on. I love Brianna. And also love Aaron Griffith. Always great to see you. Thank you, Aaron, for joining
for
us after your vacation. Your Zen state is still intact. Find her at Fortune.
2 hours later.
Bring that Zen state to Silicon Valley and, you know, leave it here.
We could use it.
Oh, God.
Fortune.com.
Yes. Fortune.com/unicorn tears will direct you to my author page. Fortune.com/get term sheet will direct you to the sign up page for my daily newsletter on deals and deal makers.
And by the way, the Unicorn Tears is not an April Fool's joke. That's actually the URL, which is the best.
That is.
And how's Larry doing on the Rubik's?
My editor gave me.
How's he doing on the Rubik's Cube? Is it?
He dropped this off earlier.
Oh, nice!
It is
solid colors all the way around. He solved it in under 2 hours.
I think we can thank a YouTube video or two for that.
Nice, very nice. Thanks to all of you for being here. We're a great studio audience. Nice to have you. You can email tickets at twit.tv. We'll be glad to get a chair out for you. Usually there's somebody who's really excited about the show and then three or four family members who are bored to tears. And you're all welcome. You can also... is it over, Dad? Is it over? It's almost over, isn't it? You can also join us on the live stream. We're live everywhere now, including youtube.com/twit. Twitch.tv/ Twitch.tv/twit, Ustream.com/twit. and twit.tv/live to really confuse the issue. If you're live, do join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. We love having the kids in the back of the class throw spitballs at us. Mm-hmm. Digital spitballs, but spitballs.
Yeah, some people, a couple of shots at me. Yeah. It's okay. Somebody said thank you. That was nice. Thank you.
No, it's great. Of course, if you can't watch live, you can always watch on demand. All of our shows are available on the marvelous thing we call the internet, twit.tv/thisweekintech, or your favorite podcatcher. Subscribe and get every episode. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next week. Another twit.
This is amazing.